This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, Multiplying Authentic Leaders, Moving Society. Adrian Groenewald, as always, Louis Groenewald, the old man, and it's time for our Leadership Masterclass. But we have a very interesting guest. Before we go there, though, visit our website, leadershipplatform.com, two P's in the middle, one word. Every single Monday, 12 to 1, we have our Leadership Masterclass, and we live in tough times. Leaders need to be enthused, energized, and in fact, as we always say, we talk about leadership fitness. So our leadership conversation today is with Nico Steyn, CEO and founder. Is it founder?
Co-founder.
Co-founder, yes, yeah. Of IoT.next. You know, these real IT sort of names. And there's lots of these sort of businesses, but this seems to be a very unique one that's going to change the world. But let's welcome Nico first. Nico, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
We're in your offices here in Centurion. We're in one of the boardrooms. You've given us a tour for the last hour. We've had a deep conversation about your business, about just where this is going. And of course, I don't have my head around all of it yet, but the essence of it is mind-blowing. And I know that you guys are heading global. We once again have I don't mean it literally, but a Stellenbosch startup. You don't live in Stellenbosch, do you?
No.
All these tech guys do seem to these days. Yeah. But yeah, so I think we're lucky in catching you now, okay? Because this is going places, already places, but it's going places. And we want to find out what your business is about, how it could impact the world, and then one or two leadership lessons you've learned thus far in your career. With me, of course, the old man. Welcome, Louis.
Great to be here. The study I've made of Nico so far really impresses me. I'm very excited speaking to this African with this great future.
For those leaders out there that are not so tech savvy, IoT.next, what does that name mean and how did you arrive at that? It's not like the old days of branding. These things are different.
Correct. So I really think, the .next is sort of the embodiment of it. So IoT, obviously, Internet of Things, and the .next really just talks to innovation, talks what is the next, part of innovation. And it really is part of our ethos, So we really drive that very hard in our business because, we really encourage and we build on that in terms of having really smart, creative people working here and innovating. We love innovation. We love new concepts, new ideas. And I think that's what it stands for.
Okay, I know this is very basic for you, but for a lot of the leaders out there that are working in banks or working in mining or working in retail, IoT is even an Internet of Things. What the heck is that? I've made a bit of a study. Beginner, but what is Internet of Things?
So I think, there's been some messaging that went out initially and I think a lot of people, when they hear Internet of Things, they think it's, having this connected fridge and being able to monitor the milk inside of the fridge and when the milk runs out, being able to tell you. But I think, to maybe use that as an example, what Internet of Things is, it's a lot more, right? So yes, it is a connected fridge. And if I've got the fridge connected, I can most probably understand the health of that fridge, the health of the machine, the health of the engine. And before that actually breaks, I can let the manufacturer know. And on the back of that, essentially the manufacturer can become predictive in terms of, or proactive in terms of how he actually maintains the uptime of the fridge. But now let's have a look at the milk, right? So if I'm understanding the milk, I can see, is the milk still fresh? Alert you before it actually isn't fresh. But now let's take it further. That milk comes from a farmer, right? So imagine we have 10,000 of these fridges or these businesses requiring milk. We can become a lot more predictable to that farmer in terms of how much milk is required. And part of that is obviously the logistics. Now being able to let the logistics companies know in terms of what type of resources do we require to get that the milk off the farm into the fridge. And then you take it a step further, right? Because now, as a result
next,
of
next
yeah,
all the time,
being able to understand how much milk we require means how many cattle do we potentially require? What kind of crops do we need to actually put down? How do we actually optimize that? The machinery that actually plants those plants and the feed, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a connected world. It's a digital world. And we become more predictable and more productive, more efficient.
All of this is possible because of the internet.
Absolutely.
Because everything can be linked to this World Wide Web, this internet net place.
So that's really been the fundamental shift, is this pervasiveness of the network. So the fact that everything now can be connected. And as a result of it being connected, we now, you know, we can see things a lot better than what we used to be.
How do you monitor my milk? Do you have a little sensor on there?
Absolutely. I
mean, physically, you have to go plant inside the carton.
Yeah, so the guys are bringing out cartons with embedded sensor technology, which can give you that type of information.
And where it costs them 5 cents to make a carton, it now costs them 10 cents or what, to put the sensor in?
Well, you know, so this is very, very interesting. I mean, we used to talk about Moore's Law, and Moore's Law spoke around, you know, silicon chips and CPUs, talking about technology, you know, doubling in capacity over a 2-year period and halving in price, and then it was over a year period. In sensor technology, we're seeing that happening now over a 3-month, even over a month period, where you're seeing the same sensor coming out 2 months later with 5 times the functionality at a quarter of the price. So as this connectivity is being driven and the volumes are rising, obviously the costs are coming down.
Yeah, it's just crazy, man.
Yeah.
All right. Now, before we go to the fact that you've actually taken this Internet of Things, that your example of the house, okay, my home, if I wanted to digitize it or put it on the internet, and then the impact of that on everyone around me, all the suppliers, supply chain into my home, you've industrialized it almost. You've taken it to corporate. So before we go there, just give us a minute for those startups now. For those big corporates, for people who want to start their own things. You didn't start with this Internet of Things business. Just a bit of your career. How did Nico end up here?
So look, I've from a very early age, I've really loved you know, the excitement of entrepreneurial sort of ventures. So I got involved in a software development firm which developed point-of-sale software in about 1996 was the first time. That we built this business, built it up, and you know, successfully sold it actually to a JSE listed company at that point. So I've loved that. There was a period of time that I actually went into corporate for about 4.5 years, and really, as much as I did well in that environment, I really didn't enjoy it that much. So again, you know, when this opportunity came along in 2013. You know, it was time, and that's really where we got involved.
What's the opportunity that came along at that stage?
So it's actually interesting, like all good things, we didn't really plan for it. So from an IoT perspective, that wasn't even the vision. We got involved in an integration project. So somebody, a colleague kind of had got involved in a project, and there was a requirement to do some integration between a whole multitude of subsystems. And that really, at that stage, it was an opportunity for me to move out of the corporate environment, and it was quite an interesting project. And what was really interesting about it is that all the equipment had been purchased. So with unknowingly, you know, we embarked on this project, and that was really the beginning of IoT, because the fundamental layer or underpin to IoT is being able to connect devices and being able to get them to interoperate. So, you know, we got thrown in the deep end where this technology had already been purchased, but none of it was actually connected, and we needed to do that. So that was the beginning.
But this industry we're in, I don't even have the words to explain it. You could start what you call an IT business 10, 20, 30 years ago, and surely that sort of business has had to reinvent itself every couple of years, and now maybe yearly almost. So to what extent have you had to reinvent yourself since 2013 as a business? I can't even imagine how you've had to keep changing, and the type of people you employ and the leadership you have to exert. And I can't even begin to imagine. And we're only talking 3-4 years?
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, I love every single moment of it. IoT.next, by the way, was only incorporated at the end of 2015. So, you know, we're reasonably
fresh, new, actually.
Yeah, fresh and new. And I think that's symptomatic. If you look at the market currently, it really is about being able to be agile and adjust your business plan to market conditions. You know, I think consumers have become a lot more demanding purely because things are a lot more visible than what they were historically. So historically, businesses could hide behind a lot of bureaucracy. Now it's transparent because, you know, the data is there. People can see it. So from that point of view, it's not just us. I mean, literally all businesses now have to be agile. You have to be able to adapt. You have to have out-of-the-box thinking to in order to remain relevant. And we see a lot of industries are under pressure because of their inability to move quickly. You know, so we see that.
So a good example is the mobile companies. We've got the big ones here in South Africa who started and they built these giants and they printed money like crazy. They probably still do, but they really printed money. And then they built huge structures around data, not data consumption, voice to a large degree. And then suddenly the data industry or movement comes along and their competitors start these small structures that they then have to buy very quickly. Because now you have to compete as a massive ship against a quick-moving, fast a speedboat. And I'm guessing that's where you find yourself, is your competitors who think they got in the game before you did are massive, probably global. You've come along as a small, nimble, clever, little bit of luck in terms of how your project started.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've got a small business that's going to compete globally with big names.
Yeah, so you make a very good point. And I must tell you, we've just come back from the US. We did some work over there. And one of the guys asked me, you know, how are you going to compete with, and they mentioned the guy's name or the company's name. They've got like billions of dollars around marketing. So I said, you know, it's actually for us not that complex. It's really deal by deal. You know, so the reality is, you know, deal by deal, we will compete. And I think one of the biggest problems that the incumbents sit with, all of them, is that structure. You know, they're driven by ego, a lot of our competitors. In other words, I want to own everything. So it's always been a culture of when you take I can give you a whole lot of benefit, but then you need to use my stack, my technology. And I think the world's moving away from it. It's old hat. You know, we want freedom of choice. We want nimble. We want future proof. But we don't want to be locked into one vendor. So our technology very much speaks to, first of all, interoperability. More importantly, retrofit, because that's another issue. So a lot of the technologies out there currently is great technology, but you actually have to turf all of the stuff that you've already invested in. So having technology that we have that allows you to retrofit and get immediate benefit from a digitization perspective, that is, I think, a massive advantage. And I believe that large corporate incumbent ego will continue, you know, to play in our favor because, you know, we're not bound by that. You know, we're nimble, we're agile, we're at the forefront, we're using the latest tool sets, and we can make a decision today, and we can actually action it tomorrow.
Louis?
Nico, many of the top leaders we involved with would love your concept of bottom-up approach. It really is important to understand that when people like these move in, normally you expect a tremendous presentation on new equipment needed, etc. These guys are different. The other thing, though, that is unique is your pride in the quality of the intelligence you have of your staff. Could you comment on that?
Well, let me just first of all say this. I am seriously proudly South African, and I truly believe in the capabilities of people in this country. And we often talk about the skills shortage. Now, the skills shortage, in my opinion, is not as a result of us not having great people in the country. The problem is we don't retain them, right? So I think, you know, that for me is the key. And if we look at the people that we have in this business, they have been handpicked, but they're world-class. They're absolutely world-class, you know? So I'm very passionate about the people that we have, the capabilities that we have within this country, and I think it's a massive strength.
Also, what's impressed me, Adrian, having a lot of experience, similar situation, is the time frame of your delivery. You speak of some remarkable short turnaround times, and in practice, other people turn into months and years sometimes.
Yeah, we live in a disruptive age, right? So if you cannot execute rapidly, you know, you're going to get disrupted. So you have to have the ability to deploy quickly to avoid that disruption or to cause that disruption. So, you know, our ethos is if we can't show value in like a really short space of time, you shouldn't actually be embarking it because you could be irrelevant. You know, that technology that you see today in 6 to 8 months potentially is irrelevant.
Nico, let's just remember now that your CEOs out there in general are more tech savvy than they've been. They were 10, 20 years ago, but generally they the older generation, I don't know what it is again, what do you call them? It's not the Y generation, the X generation. All. So if you have an audience of 20 CEOs sitting in front of you right now, of large businesses, explain in simplicity how you are going to change their world.
Okay. So our discussion has got nothing to do with technology, right? It's about strategy. So how do we actually become more competitive is a strategic discussion. It shouldn't be led by tech. So when we engage with C-suite leaders, we talk about where do you want to move the business, right? What are the key drivers that move the dial, that increase relevance? What are those key strategic levers that you actually want to pull? And then we plug in the tech. So we don't actually want to have a discussion around tech. We want to understand strategically where you actually want to move the business. You know, our technology is of such a nature that we can easily deploy it and plug those gaps. And we often talk about the black holes in the business. So all of these guys are running great businesses, but there are areas in the business where it's sort of a bit of a black hole. They don't have visibility. They're not really, they know that something's potentially wrong, but they're not quite sure. And I think that's what our technology really does. And there's a lot of talk about disruption and people becoming more effective, et cetera, et cetera. We believe the disruption happens internally. So if I can start seeing my business better, I can respond to issues, I can become more proactive as opposed to reactive.
Okay, now, obviously, a lot of businesses have systems that are helping them understand what's going on in their organization. But from your side, you will come in and let everything talk to everything.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's how it makes sense in my simple mind.
So let me liken it. We all go on December holidays, we go down to this beach, and then we buy this 1,000-piece puzzle for the days where it's rainy, right? And inevitably, the second last day, we really work hard to complete the puzzle, and there's like one piece missing, right? And it's gone. We don't know where it went to. But the reality is that flipping one piece that's missing actually spoils the entire picture, right? And I think that talks to our technology is I'm getting data out of my world and I'm putting it into whatever reporting tool, analytics tool, etc. But I need to actually have all of the pieces to really get the full picture, and that's what our technology enables.
It brings that final piece that makes it all click.
Absolutely.
But remember, Arjun, we at Evil One, great CEO, and he said he was in a big conference overseas and one of the world's greatest companies were there, and he asked the CEO there, any advice? And the guy said to him that you must always retain the line of sight. And this is exactly what you're speaking about. No matter how cumbersome and big the organization is, your first duty as a CEO is to have line of sight, know what's going on.
Correct. So, that's one of our biggest problems, right? Is, people, you're only as good as your weakest link. And, we have great people in our organizations, but inevitably, here and there we have weakness. And again, I think, business and technology and the economy is moving at such a rapid rate that in order for us to remain relevant, we need to have sight, we need to have visibility of what's actually happening there. So again, I think we have a lot of analog systems, people, analog systems. We need to get those into a digital phase.
So a light bulb just went on for me. So I hope I can explain it in very simple terms. This week I had some serious conversations with high-level leaders about the challenge of leading with facts, the challenge of getting information that helps you see the true picture so that you can make decisions and lead. And what happens is our structures, our positions change how we act. So because you're my boss, I don't act normally in front of you. I report to you what's been reported to me all the way up the structures, but on every level, what I'm going to say now counts. The title makes it impossible for people, or very difficult, to be normal and to tell you what you really need to hear. I package it. I share with you what makes me look good, or I share with you what I think you want to hear. And because of that position, position changes people's behavior.
Yeah.
And for example, we might sit here and say how pathetic a leader Zuma is, or like everyone else is doing. But if he walked in this door behind me, no matter what we said, how will we act? We will immediately stand up and be very respectful of the president, won't we? He'll never know what we really spoke about him or said about him. And that's what title does. Now, because it makes us act weirdly or differently, and we're not exceptionally open, that means reporting is affected all the way up the structures, Nico. So whatever information I get about what's going on underground in a mine, for example,
yes,
It's based on reports that people are giving me.
Yes.
And if I have brilliant intelligence that can tell me exactly what's happening in the business, and I can then focus on my people,
yes,
motivating, inspiring my people, mm, as opposed to fighting with them about wrong information. And why didn't you tell me exactly what the situation was there? Well, I thought I'd deal with it before I give you the full picture, and then it caught up on me. Or do you see what I'm saying?
I've got you.
I mean, there's a distinction here between getting the right information of the true facts and what the situation is and dealing with the people.
Yeah, so I think the biggest challenge and most really the biggest shortcoming in a lot of organizations is around latency, right? So it's something happens and there's latency in terms of that message getting to the right level within the organization.
Yes.
And then inevitably when it hits us, it's a crisis,
yeah,
right? So what digitization does, it's data, real time or near real time. And data doesn't lie, right? So if you've configured it and calibrated it correctly, that latency gets shortened or in fact obviated in a lot of the cases. So it's really about being able to get that real-time view in terms of where we are, as opposed to having something take place, it having to move three, four structures, it gets diluted, it gets misinterpreted, it miscommunicated, and ultimately, you know, it costs us. So that really is, for me, the key is cutting down latency and getting the facts. And, you know, the reality is the data doesn't lie.
Okay, so we say the world has moved into a real-time situation where we know what's happening in the Oscar Pistorius case right now.
Yep.
Because there are journalists, they're tweeting right now, or even recording, and someone beats up on someone on road rage, and we see it right now. So everything is real-time in terms of news. Maybe it's high time that information for a leader in his or her business becomes real time.
Well, that's where it's going.
That's where it's right? going.
That's exactly where it's going. So, and the leaders that are moving quickest, they seeing the benefit, you know, earliest. So it's literally that. So taking, having that information at your fingertip, not having to ask this manager who now has to ask that manager who has to get that from somebody else. Literally being able to press a button and being able to see what.
So you can know at the push of a button what's happening underground, 3 kilometers underground with the mining now, what they're blasting right now.
Correct.
What rock is coming
out
right now.
That really is where the technology
needs to be. That's where it's
going. Yeah.
So that's how you're changing the world. I hope we made that clear, and we can probably talk about that for another few minutes, but we don't have all the time in the world. What's your biggest challenge thus far as a business leader? So you've got these bright people leading that you have to lead. I mean, that's not easy. I've been in these kind of businesses where you've got technically superb individuals, passionate about what they do. Leading those type of peoples, or leading lawyers, or leading engineers, or leading, you know, they all bring a different culture. So that's on the one hand, just running your own business, your biggest challenge. But then just in terms of the product that you're giving, getting it, what's your biggest challenge to take this thing global?
So let's talk about the team first of all. I think cohesiveness is the underlying.
Is that a leadership lesson that you're learning? It's
absolutely. And you know, when you deal with smart, creative people, they're very complex, right? They think in 4D, never mind 3D. And generally, a lot of them don't really communicate that well. So it's really about understanding and creating an environment where they can innovate, where they can express thinking. Where we can't have hierarchy. So I cannot have, Google talks about hippos. You cannot have that. Just because you've been here the longest and because you've done the most projects doesn't mean that you're the only guy whose ideas count. So being able to create a platform where the youngest member of the team can challenge thinking, you know, that, you know, right at the top. And being able to create that culture of free thinking, free innovation, you know, and almost being fearless because you need to. Look, you know, the reality is the team is quite well balanced. So we have older guys that have been around for a bit longer. They have generally more of a defensive type of strategy when they're writing code, as opposed to the younger guys who, I mean, it's second nature, you know, they have no fear, everything's possible, you know, but in the process, you obviously need to find that balance. So I think that really is the key. And at this point, I actually can't remember the second part of the question. So if you can maybe...
We'll go there now. I mean, it's just for our leaders to learn out there that you've got a great business here. It's doing well already. You've gone overseas. You've got verification, clearly, yeah, that you're going global. And you are ahead of, potentially, the really big boys out there, whoever they may be.
Yes.
Now it's about getting that team. Because correct, the product can be great, the service can be great, the people can be bright, but cohesiveness, unity.
Yeah. I think for me, it's also... it comes down to attitude, right? So you get overseas, you know, we have a bit of a mindset from a South African perspective. And you know, that for me is the key, is it's in your attitude. So you get to the US and you immediately think, well, you know, what could we be doing in South Africa, you know, that could be that innovative? And then you get in that environment and you realize, but hang on, you know, we onto something here. We're kicking some serious butt. So from that perspective, I think it's definitely got to do about mindset, attitude, having belief that what we're busy with is actually cutting edge and that it's globally competitive. And then, we have challenges. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges that we have from a technology perspective, and you can look, there's a lot of great technology in South Africa, is being able to globalize it, purely because, you know, it's geography, it's a currency. It's all of those type of challenges that one has to take cognizance of. But then at the same time, we have huge advantages because we've got a lower cost base. Those type of things also play into our favor. So I really think there's swings and roundabouts, and you just need to think on your feet and bank the positives and build on that.
That was the second part of the question, is from a business perspective, what's your biggest obstacle, resistance to get? Is that part of it? How do you go global? I mean, you could grow. You can't grow fast enough. Am I right? I mean, it's the sales force.
Yeah.
Closing the deals out there. You can't go fast enough.
Yeah. So I think, you know, you have to have some realism, a level of that, not too much, but you really have to kind of shoot for the stars and maybe you hit the moon. You know, I think that's kind of where we're at. Certainly from our point of view, you know, there's a lot of organic growth that's happening, but it's also around strategic partnership. You know, you need to leverage the channel. You can't go and do it all over, you know, yourself. So, you know, if we've got 100 or 70 guys or 100 guys working out of an office over here, let's mobilize, you know, 2,000 or 10,000 people in other organizations, create an ecosystem and leverage off that. So that's really the key. And it's not really that difficult. I think, it has its challenges, but I think ultimately, if you've got the right technology, you know, people want to work with you.
And just to end off with, how long will it be before your competitors catch up on your competitive advantage that you have?
So what was interesting, when I went into the Intel building now recently in Silicon Valley, they've got a whole lot of statements on the wall, and one of it was, you know, to stay ahead of innovation, you need to lead it. And I think because you then get visibility in terms of where that needs to be. So, in terms of where we are, you know, we need to continue to innovate. So we're ahead of the pack at the moment. What we're certainly not now doing is, you know, bedding down and sort of just staying where we are. It's the next level. So it's now into machine learning. It's into AI. We believe the edge is going to eat the cloud, you know. So it's peer-to-peer communication at the edge. So it really is taking what we have, innovating on that, but more importantly, also bringing new ideas into the pack. And if we continue on the basis that we do, then I think we're a moving target. So
it's going to consume you, can it not? I mean, this fast-changing world can absolutely consume you and your life and everything.
Yeah. We have a cell group, a business cell group, and we had it this morning, and we were talking about, you know, exactly that, you know, that you need to bring balance into your life. And fortunately, at a spiritual level, you know, we work very closely with God in this actual organization. And I think ultimately, you know, I think the bigger purpose in life is that you don't achieve success and destroy yourself in the process. So I think it is finding that balance and achieving what you need to achieve. But, you know, if you've lost yourself in the process, what's the point? So maybe we don't get to dominate every single country in the world. But, you know, let's keep some sanity. Let's keep family. Let's keep children, you know, and let's, you know, live a meaningful life.
Nico Steyn, CEO and co-founder of IoT.next. Watch them closely. Good to have you here with us. We wish you well on this journey. Another South African business that's going places, and we do that a lot. You know, we're at the tip end of Africa. We sometimes think we can, you know, everyone else must bring what they have to us, but we can take what we have to them. And I like your confidence. We can show the world. We have on many respects, haven't we? So let's keep doing that. And good luck, man. We'll keep a tab on how you're doing.
Thank you very much, Audrey. And I think just as a closing statement is constraint is a friend of innovation. And a lot of the edge that we have in terms of what we've built has been because of some of the constraints that we've lived with. So we mustn't normally, we shouldn't see that as a disadvantage. In a lot of cases, it actually makes us more resilient and more resourceful. So, but thank you very much.
Wise words. Louis, 10 seconds. Anything you want to say as we close off?
No, I just love the spirit of what Nico has brought to discussion and to leadership in general, and I'm looking forward to the future with them.
Next up, Business Masterclass. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.